Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next incredible episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. So today I find myself on my beautiful porch. I'm truly blessed, and I'm going to make a statement here that might shock you, but that is that you are truly blessed too. Now, you might be living through right now some significant trauma. There may have been things that have happened to you recently or in your life in the past at some point that have affected you in a negative way or left you with resentment or left you with regret or left you in misery or maybe even left you in pain. And I'm not minimizing those experiences at all. In fact, I'd like to say that I'm emphasizing that. The world as we know it is serving up pain like it's never done before. And fear and anxiety are here as a natural way of being. As you walk through the world each and every day, there's at least a high likelihood that the specters of fear and anxiety affect you on a daily basis. And if you're like even some or sometimes even most people, it's much more often than just once a day. It's sort of something you have to acknowledge and either embrace, attempt to push back, attempt to deny, get it out of your world, pretend that it isn't painful or miserable. Or maybe you have to transmute it. It's not every moment that I'm going to tell you that I'm blessed. That's part of my point here. Meaning, when things don't appear to be going well, it sure doesn't feel like a blessing. It feels like something that's so undesirable, maybe unfair, unreasonable, intolerable. And yet, it is part of this blessing of being a human being. Please understand, I can't say it enough, that I don't mean to undermine or diminish the effects of whatever pain you either might be going through or someone you know might be going through. I guess what I am saying is even within that pain, you are blessed. We usually, in this day and age where comfort is sought after as a way of being like healthy, if you're not comfortable, you're unhealthy, then we might equate the word blessed with being in joy or in happiness or in comfort. I'm suggesting something a little bit different than that. I'm actually suggesting that even in pain, even in misery, even in massive discomfort, the blessing that you are and that has been given to you is not altered. The blessing comes from being alive. Again, please let me emphasize and underline that I'm asking you to detach the word blessing from the word comfortable. I'm really asking you to get that the blessing persists whether or not you're comfortable. And your humanity persists whether or not you're in pain. And in that humanity, just the inherent nature of being alive at this present time while you're listening to or watching me is representative of a sheer blessing. It is hard to wrap my arms around that. It's not something that I feel entirely confident about. Well, especially when I consider that there are some of you out here who are hearing this and saying, F no, I am definitely not blessed. I mean, look at my bank account. Look at my losses. Look at my present health. Look at the things that I've done wrong or have been done wrong to me. Look at my future, my likely future, my predicted future. There's no way that you can look all that straight in the face and tell me that I'm blessed. Again, the exercise here is to detach the word blessed from the word comfort. Can you be blessed as a living human being, even when you're in significant misery, significant pain, significant discomfort? From this perspective, as I sit out here today, without question being blessed, the weather is exquisite. The view is indomitable. My company, my wife, my cats are extraordinary. My health is excellent. I just finished a beautiful dinner. And I'm even imbibing in hookah. And I'm sitting in a comfy chair in the quiet of the shade of my porch. Now, it's not hard from here to feel blessed. Kind of comes naturally. But if you really want to look at what is blessing, what I'm inviting you to do is to look beyond just being blissful. So the difference between bless and bliss is more than the vowel that sits in the middle. They're often seen as being similar to each other. That when blessed, you can feel blissful. But here's a challenging question. Can you be blissful even when you're in significant discomfort? What is happiness after all? Is it the absence of sadness? Is it the absence of discomfort? Is it the absence of pain? Well, what I'm submitting in today's conversation is that happiness is being in touch with everything at a time. What's so is that this life here on Earth, this three-dimensional, binary-based, temporary life that we call our own, is chock full of challenges, chock full of uncertainties, and chock full at times of very significant pain, discomfort, anxiety, fear, depression, negativity, skepticism, resignation. in those experiences, in our capacity to actually feel, to have the sensation of those experiences, is it possible to equate those experiences as being an important part of what it means to be human? And then to understand at the base of the entire conversation that simply to be a human being, above all experiences that we might be having from that human being perspective, represents the highest form of being blessed. Some people, when they talk about blessing, are talking about something religious. Or some people are talking about something cosmic. Or something from another world. An acknowledgement from an outside force. An acknowledgement from something that is not us. That we have been blessed, that there's a blessing bestowed upon us. Well, certainly that is one form of blessing. But even here tonight, what I'm suggesting is that the blessing that I'm speaking to is not bestowed from the outside. It's not brought on by a man up in the sky with a gray beard, judging your life to be good or comfortable. And even that distinction between good and comfortable, one has to be very, very delicate around that. As I speak to this, it seems that there's a rushing surge of all the pain I've ever felt in my life. Like a reminder flashing in front of me of pain that has had me all the way on the brink of wondering why go on, or even considering not going on, all the way to being in a space where not only do I feel like going on is a good idea, but I wish that this moment would last forever. Blessing is not a function of where you are on that particular timeline. Blessing is something that overlooks all that. Blessing is something that really takes into consideration that maybe, just maybe, it exists over and above whether or not you're comfortable, or whether or not you even can agree that you're blessed. I wasn't expecting to start off this conversation with a sermon. In fact, I'm pretty sure I've never actually given a sermon. So maybe I just gave one. But I didn't just give it to you. And I didn't just give it to any other of the listeners who are out there. I really also, and maybe I always do, am reminding me of this whole notion. I'm Dr. Fred, and I'm the founder of Welcome to Humanity. And I'm the founder of True Voice. I'm also known as the Undoctor, because I undiagnose people. This leaves them without whatever condition they thought they had. And as a natural correlation to that, they then choose to stop treating themselves as if they're sick. What does that actually look like? How does that materialize? When you're not sick, you don't need treatment. You don't need a specialist to make you unsick. one of the really incredible things that I've learned over the years, and I think we all know this, is that we as humans have this incredible tool to really harmonize with the world around us. We have something called resiliency. We have something called homeostasis. We tend towards health. The vital force, as some people call it, is a force that moves us to the best of its ability towards a balance in this life. So with that resilience, if we're able to get out far enough into the world, we can trust that we will, in fact, head towards healing as a natural self-expression. It's extraordinary, really, to come to grips with that. And I, for one, certainly don't always have my arms wrapped around that quite gargantuan concept. But when I do, there's a sense of calm, a sense of being in the right space right now, a sense of being able to listen to the world, speak to the world, and then listen to myself speaking to the world. With that, I'm going to ask you and me to take a deep breath. Ah, I have a guest with us today, another cosmic individual who I can't wait to introduce you to. And Chris, I'm going to ask you to take a breath with me. So please feel free to come on camera. Thank you. We're just going to take a deep breath, one very large deep breath. Into our nose, into our cranial cavity, as deep as it can go, and hold it at the top, acknowledging a full inhale of the world around you. Hold it and acknowledge. And when you exhale, have yourself releasing the toxins, the discomforts, the disruptions that often have us think that we are not blessed. It's actually an extraordinary event that we subjectively can give up the notion that we're blessed just because we're deeply uncomfortable. Kind of extraordinary. As if we know whether we're blessed and when we are and when we're not. Wild.
I think we're blessed all the time.
Right? Exactly.
I love that you're talking about resilience. I believe resilience is conditioned. You know, it's something that gets to be put into effect based on our desire to be more resilient, I think.
Say more about that. This is Chris Steele, a good friend of mine. We've been getting closer and closer for the last, I don't know, half a year or so. And it was such an honor to have a few contacts with him today and invite him to the True Voice Show. So Chris, yeah, say more about resilience, as you just said. Tell us a little more what you're coming from.
Well, first off, extending gratitude to you, Dr. Fred, for having me on the call. It's always a pleasure and honor to interface with you. It's funny, resilience, you know, we think about resilience, you know, bouncing back, you know, physical resilience, mental resilience, being able to handle all the challenges that are thrown our way. And I think a lot of people in the world we live in today lack that because they just surrender to their basic reptilian pleasure pain instincts, right? Mm-hmm. And what I teach and what I do, I work with businesses, right? Business is a mechanism of value exchange. And I teach business leaders and teams to exchange value more effectively, right? And we live in a world where there's a lot of uncertainty and strangeness these days, more than ever. I mean, I don't really recognize the world we live in. And what we get to do is consciously resolve that we're going to step into that space and be the people that, you know, that you're describing, that are aware, that are grateful, that are possibilities oriented, right? And then and only then can we actually entertain the concept of resilience. And again, there's components, physical resilience, mental resilience, and being able to bounce back and condition ourselves to put ourselves into a space of strength, if you want to call it that, right? So we can bounce back from adversity, right? And I'm just like anybody else is, right? I'm a human being, a flesh and bone meat package, doing my best to integrate into a world that doesn't necessarily always agree with me. And I get to approach that with that heart of gratitude and understanding that it's happening for me, not to me, right? That getting away from that victim state and being a victor, right? And overcoming. So.
Well said. Yeah, before you were on, we were really speaking to exactly what you just said. And there's something like, you know, the role I take that the world is happening to me instead of for me, and, you know, especially becomes attractive when I'm uncomfortable and I can somehow blame an outside force for my discomfort. You know, I can say that you upset me, or that they upset me, or that the weather upsets me, or that the senator from my home state upsets me, anything. And none of that is really actually true. And I guess I'm asking, you know, when you say that we're blessed always, I think subjectively, there are points during the day or the week that if you tell me I'm blessed, I'm just going to tell you to F off. I'm just going to tell you, no, I'm not. If I was blessed, I would not be feeling like this life isn't worth it. I would not be feeling as if my, you know, my toe is throbbing, or that my heart is broken, or that I just lost something valuable, or that I can't get to where I want, or that I'm see other people hurting other people, or maybe in the even worst case scenario, that I recognize that I just hurt someone. How is that being blessed? So subjectively, it might not be available. But I heard you say that being blessed is an always deal. And that would include even those times when I don't know myself to be blessed, that I'm even blessed in those times. What do you think about that? What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think the example, just as you started, you brought me into this space, is conscious breathing. I mean, one of the things I default to from a gratitude perspective is I'm grateful that I can breathe. Yet yeah. It's not something that I'm conscious of. You know, what do they say? The universe is breathing me, because I don't think about it. It's an unconscious process. And if we could become conscious of the fact that we can oxygenate like you had me do as we came into the space, immediately that for me, that triggers an awareness of, again, gratitude, consciousness, oxygenation. It actually puts oxygen into my psychology, and it allows me to shift away from maybe frumpy, dumpy, victim state or whatever into a more resilient, possibilities-oriented state. So I don't know if that was your intention, Fred, coming in with breath, but it worked. And I came into the space resilient, ready to go, but even more gratitude, deeper grounded in the space, you know, and thank you for doing that. And it's a great way to do it. So.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's been going on for me these last few days is that, I've been kind of trying to grapple with what is going to, you know, I read everywhere and I think everywhere, you know, my life's been sometimes is in pretty significant disarray, at least from my own subjective impression. And I'm like, you know, then I start searching around, like, how am I going to get out of disarray? And someone says, oh, get a morning routine. And, you know, like a morning routine, that seems unrelated, but y'all think you got a morning routine that helps. Let me try. And then tried to put a morning routine into 7 or 12 minutes of after waking up. Well, the last 2 days, I have altered my morning routine to being a 4-hour experience. Literally 4 hours. I wrote it out, and my morning routine takes 4 hours. I could go over each piece, but it includes everything that I would ever want to do in a day to get the flow going, to get me detached from thinking that I know what the hell is going on. To get me, you know, what I do know is that if I move my physical body vigorously, if I drink my water, if I meditate, if I read either, you know, spirituality or instruction or even pleasure, if I write my morning pages, you know, if I feed my cats, if I breathe, you know, like conscious breathing, if I sit and meditate, and if I take a cold shower, which is part of it, I've come pretty close then to priming myself to be ready for the day that is above me, like getting that I don't have access to how this day goes. And thank goodness, and I can appreciate the tests or the challenges of what it is to be alive today, right now. And by setting that flow, and I've only done it for 3 days, you know, check on me next week if I'm still doing a 4-hour morning routine. I really think I will be. And it offers for me an entirely, like a free access to exploring the painful challenge. I have been in pain today, you know, not physical pain, but pretty deep emotional pain at various moments of today. I'm not right now. I mean, how could I be? This is the essence of ecstatic bliss. But even in both situations, there's a recognition of me being blessed, you see, from starting that flow of not only me being blessed, not like Fred's blessed and you're not, but like this is called blessing. Like this, and it's not even delivered from God or from a deity. It's more about just what's so. This is, I breathe. Therefore, I'm blessed. It's almost like that. Or I am here. Therefore, I'm blessed. I exist. Therefore, I'm blessed. That's the end. There is no conditionality to whether or not this life is a blessing. Your thoughts?
So toward the concept of the routine, I think a routine allows us to have the discipline to condition ourselves to be in the mindset you're describing, right? And I've had lots of routines in my life, whether it be an athletic routine when I was performing athletically in the military, the routine of waking up at reveille, you know, and so many routines. And one of the things I appreciate, a good routine, and one of the things I like about a good morning ritual routine, it's always good to vary it too. Mm-hmm. Because we are creatures, right? We all want certainty, but we all want variety too, right? And routines are good. At the same time, I think that we need to vary it, and that allows our mind to be more attached and attracted to the variety. And ultimately, that's the value of a good routine and conditioning. When you wake up in the morning, is to put ourselves consciously into a condition of possibilities and opportunities, in you know, whatever that looks like for us, right? Mm-hmm. And I like that you said, you know, hey, there's change, there's pain, there's challenge, there's struggle. Hey, welcome to being human, right?
Exactly.
And what we get to do is confront that. And I'll use the word discipline again, with discipline, and discipline in a good way, to hold ourselves accountable toward what we can be. Because if we don't, it's almost like gravity will pull us down into a level of status quo, a victim condition. And that's one of the things I teach, is it's really important to make sure we're keeping our lives above the line, because gravity will pull us into a blame, excuse, denial component, right? And we get to condition ourselves through ritualistically by taking ownership, accountability, and responsibility for everything that happens to us in life and the difference we were put here to make, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. Amazing what you're saying. You know, it's not something I can will myself. But I'm trying to think, well, how would I have heard what you said just now if I was on the go and maybe thinking that life has me by the tail and that I, you know, don't have a handle and that I'm miserable and in pain, which of course could happen anytime. And I would have heard you, but there wouldn't be a resonance. So here's what I'm asking. Do you think this can be taught through speaking, or is this something that you have to take on through action, through surrender, through throwing all 52 cards back in? Do you have to do all that, or what does it really take to, because there's some people out here, Chris, you can be sure that there's some people listening to this who are thinking we're full of shit, right? Who for now, at the moment, are like, man, these guys are woo-woo freaks, you know? They're not catching up. what can be done to walk people? And maybe it's not for everyone. Actually, that's another point. Is it not everyone has to know they're blessed after all?
Well, I think part of it is shifting the state, because if you get into a state of less than resilient, maybe dumpy, frumpy victim state, shift away from that. And this is one of the things I do. I'm a neuro-linguistic programming guy. One of the things we were just talking about in NLP is to shift somebody's condition and, you know, interrupt a pattern, right? And we all have patterns. And some of the time it gets tough and everything, and you can blame and everything. But if you can actually, and you can use words to do it, you know, notice how I'm using my words and my tonality and my voice and my inflection with a little more power. And there's more force in what I'm saying now. I can use words. At the same time, my experience, it's all about the individual action that the human gets to take, which shows their level of commitment to what the words they use say they intend to do. You know, words are just words, right? The people call me a motivational speaker. I'm not a motivational speaker. I speak in a motivating way. What I like to do is inspire people, right? And engage them toward their possibilities and get them to take the action that they need to take.
We're going to talk on the backside of this. I know that I think I know that you have to leave now. It's been what a delightful conversation. We're going to go to commercial, and then come back from the commercial. We're going to talk a little bit about that linchpin between speaking and wanting and knowing that we can do something, and then actually flipping into action, and how that is a actual sort of a river to jump over. That action is not an extension of thinking, wanting, desiring, and designing. Action is a step in and of itself. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining us and just shining a light on your own blessing and our blessing together. I love you dearly. Thanks for being on the True Voice with Dr. Fred show. Hang around for the commercial. It's kind of cool. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Love you, brother. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I think we're ready for that commercial.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect. And from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Fred. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. We'll be right back.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. One of the things about becoming aligned, one of the things about, you know, or maybe not becoming aligned, it's not like one ever arrives at full alignment, but taking the bold steps to head towards being aligned with who you know yourself to be. One of the features of it is you don't have to remember what you said last week in order to say it again today. Like when I hear that commercial, I get that I absolutely can continue to resonate with who I am and what I came here to do and who I get to be. So when I step back from handling the psychiatric field in a conventional way, and I start doing it in a way that is aligned with who I know myself to be, that maybe mental illness itself is simply a conversation, meaning that it's subject to profound transformation by creating another conversation, then I start realizing that that's consistent with me, and I don't have to remember that I said that last week or last month or 7 years ago with Welcome to Humanity or in 2006 when I became the undoctor, the healer that I know myself to be. I essentially stopped being the doctor that people wanted me to be. And although I had attempted to bring communication, creativity, and connection to my previous relationships professionally before 2006, instead, I was kind of following what was asked of me, diagnosing people all day long, medicating people all day long, whether or not I thought that it was right. And once I did that, they were under the impression that since I medicated them, it's my responsibility for the medicines to work. This is kind of a conundrum because the medicines don't usually work. And I know that when I'm prescribing them, and I'm left with a chasm. You see, the people have come to me. Why do you come to a psychiatrist after all? You know, these days, a psychiatrist has been typecast as the doctor that actually, like, provides medication, at least in the mental health world. So what's the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist? I think, 95% of the people, when they answer from their basic self, will say, oh yeah, psychiatrists, they're the ones who medicate people. And they assume that that's the main difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist. So in fact, I had gone into psychiatry with the idea that I would not have to medicate people, because in 1983, when I decided that it was time for me to be a psychiatrist, it was on the tail of just seeing that these medications were literally, to say hurt, damaging, were actually damaging the kids that I was working with at the State Hospital for Adolescents in Michigan. And I just found it so barbaric that it was okay to medicate these kids with injectable antipsychotics. And to somehow call it a success if they became stuporous enough not to be able to argue or not to be able to stay up too late or not to be able to get in a fight with their peers. It seemed like that level of constraint and restraint was inhumane. And when I went into psychiatry, it was with the full assumption that, because it was then where I not only had the rest of undergraduate school to finish, but then I had to find my way into medical school and then find my way into an internship and then into a residency and then into a fellowship. With all that said, my intention was to come into this field and bring communication, conversation, creativity, and even more so, human connection to the center of the psychiatric industry. In 1987, there was a paradigmatic shift that took place in the world of mental health. some of you maybe already can identify what that was, or even might have lived through it. But it was a massive shift in how mental health got delivered that we're still living in the wake of. And that was the introduction of Prozac as a medication. Up until that time, there had been some antidepressants, and they were thought to be dangerous in overdose. In fact, people died from overdoses. And there had been antipsychotic medications as well, and anti-anxiety agents as well. The anti-anxiety agents, you know, in the day, in the 50s and 60s, were barbiturates. Again, taking an overdose could lead to death. But there was a shift around that time to what was thought to be less lethal and therefore somehow more effective and easier to prescribe substances that could right the wrong of being uncomfortable. Prozac was introduced in 1987. On its heels, many new antidepressants were also introduced. I believe Zoloft was second, Paxil was third. And also, you know, although Xanax had been around as an anti-anxiety agent, other anti-anxiety agents were created around that time as well. So when I graduated medical school and started my internship and residency, I was now being called on to do the exact thing that I went into medicine never to do. Not only that, I had actually gone into medicine so that I could be a psychoanalyst. I really thought that inside of those conversations, the conversations of empowerment, that I suspected were at the heart of the psychoanalytic theory line, was where healing took place. But an unfortunate circumstance took place in 1989. I had already begun my own personal psychoanalysis as an analysan, they call it. And I was in analysis for the next 8 or 9 years, actually, you know, averaging 4 times a week on a couch with my psychiatrist, looking deeply into free association and all pieces that make me up. But psychoanalysis wasn't as readily available anymore. Initially, it looked like my psychoanalysis would be covered. But instead, now, if I worked in a state hospital, there was a stipend that allowed those doctors who worked in a state hospital to get their psychoanalysis paid. But this stopped being the case my first year after starting psychoanalysis. Well, you don't terminate psychoanalysis if you can help it. And certainly you try not to terminate it because of money concerns. So I stepped up my conventional practice and found extremely creative ways to make a lot of money as a psychiatrist, primarily so I could find a way, at least among other things, could find a way to pay for my psychoanalysis. So I was spinning like a top, doing something that was misaligned with who I was, and then going to psychoanalysis 4 times a week to figure out why I was misaligned. It makes me dizzy to describe it today, but at the time, my goodness, it was irreconcilable without a significant change. My history between 2002 and 2006 is also a big speckle, and we'll speak to that at another time. But I had had a DUI in 2002, and this led to all sorts of complications, but not in 2002. Actually, when it got rediscovered in 2006, there was some concerns that maybe I needed to be evaluated. Now, granted, I was sober, clean, and sober entirely for those years. And life took another turn towards deep challenge. In 2006, I went through all sorts of changes, and including really being faced with whether or not I wanted to continue being a doctor. After going through all those alterations, after going through all those challenges, It was precisely speaking my truth that led to the notion of actually doing what I knew was right as a doctor rather than what I was told I needed to do. So it's no coincidence whatsoever that 2006 is the dime that I turned on. It is the bottleneck. It is the eye of the needle. It is when healing became something that I was not only interested in providing, but began to provide on a regular basis. You heard in my commercial that it's important that I not have the doctor-patient relationship. That's the experiment I'm working with over the last several years. I have it that the doctor-patient relationship creates a rather permanent and indelible notion of really a power gradient that's insurmountable. It's like you come back to the doctor and the doctor has something you want, and you know, almost like a paternalistic relationship that really doesn't allow for ultimate healing, ultimately. Meaning, you're always less than your doctor. Now, this idea of welcome to humanity starts to take into consideration that the doctor, I may have some experiences, and I do, a lot of experiences, and 40,000 people who have called me their doctor for at least one moment in time, you know, including like nursing home patients and emergency room patients and on-call patients and consults. And but that doesn't make me any better or any less ill or more healthy, not in and of itself. The work has to be done to be healthy. Chris and I had been talking. You know, we have meditation. We have drinking water. We have breathing. You know, we have reading spirituality. We have I like a cold shower, like drinking celery juice. I like writing. I recently have been writing 3 long pages a day as a function of The Artist's Way, a program that I'm in that is bringing out my own creative self. And then physical exercise or training, like moving my body in ways that exceed comfort. I need a trainer for that. I need someone else because I would stop short of being as vigorous as I am if I was with me. Sometimes I notice when I have that 30-pound medicine ball in my hand, I'm like, okay, that's enough already. And my trainer will say, okay, 15 more. And I'll be like, 15 more what? You know, and I keep going, reps, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11. I'm surprised myself. I'm like, okay, only 9 more, you know, loading the squats. And okay, my hip, you know, here, am I going to be able to keep going? 7, 6, 5, 4. And then, you know, as it gets to about 3, I can realize that I'm going to be able to finish the set. What's really interesting about that is it does translate very well to everyday life. You look at a task and you move from thinking about it to actually doing it. When my trainer says, give me 35 push-ups, or he doesn't quite say it that way, like, you know, it's not like, not the exact words, but close enough. The first thing I'm thinking is I'm not able to, or I don't know how to, or I don't want to, or what if I can't? But as I crawl onto the floor with my arms extended, I have moved into a phase that's called doing. In the phase called doing, the miraculous becomes possible. And there I am, up and down, 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 31, 32, 33, 34, and then 30, 5, extend the arms and get up. One of the best parts of physical training is it takes me from thinking about it, imagining it, wondering about it, and moves that to action, to actually performing an action, to actually doing that which is being asked of me or which I have committed myself to performing. This task of moving things from I could or I might or I have a chance of or if X happened, then I could do Y, into a state of doing, of actually performing that action, is a step like jumping over a river. Truth is, you can do way more than you think you can. More than likely, your limiting beliefs are actually restricting that which you could do if you would let some of them go. So today I'm going to ask you to let go some of those limiting beliefs. Let go so that you can start to feel the power of doing. We become addicted to doing, as if we don't get something done, then we're not living a full life. I certainly am not saying that. Reading, writing, sitting, breathing, cleaning, creating. These are exquisite parts of being human as well. So the opportunity is here today to step into not doing. And guess what? Even from a state of not doing, not speaking, not listening, not performing, not supposedly not doing much, that is just as much a blessed state as a state of multitasking or even accomplishing something that is far beyond that which you ever thought you could do. They both receive the same amount of blessing. What am I speaking towards? I'm again speaking towards the blessing that comes inherently with the whole idea of being alive. It really is extraordinary. It really is available. I invite you, no matter where you are in the world, to step into that possibility. I'm going to disclaim it one more time because I know there are many out there who are thinking, yeah, maybe his life is blessed, but mine sure as hell isn't. Again, step away from the equation that blessed means pleasure, because it doesn't. Pleasure and pain, discomfort and sorrow, even misery, an intolerable experience, do not negate the notion that being alive in the world today, as you are, because after all, you wouldn't be here listening to me, is undeniably a sign of being blessed. Not in a woo-woo way, not in a religious way. In a real way, as a human, being alive is all that matters, is the only condition necessary to call yourself blessed. So I now bless you. I bless you for being exactly who you are and who you're not. I bless you for all the pleasures and ecstasy, all the beauty, all the comfort that you found for yourself and that you may be living in right this very second. But I also bless you and also do for all of the opposite experiences, the low vibration experiences, the ones that are unsatisfying, the ones that are undesirable, the ones that are uncomfortable. And get that those two rank as being part of the potpourri that is called a blessing. With that, well, thank you for tuning in. If you stayed on for this whole show, well, I invite you to share this episode You can find me at drfred@welcometohumanity.net. And you can find me at the True Voice community in Facebook. If you want my book, it's a beautiful book called findyourtruevoicebook.com. Go there, sign up, and I'll send you a copy. Thanks for tuning in today. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. It's been a blessing. Welcome to humanity. Welcome to True Voice. Catch you on the flip side.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?